This is Cincinnati Edition on 91.7 WVXU. I'm Mark Caney. Coming up on today's show, the state of innovation and technology in Greater Cincinnati. First up, the recent bizarre string of clown sightings, threats, and arrests throughout Ohio and the nation may have triggered some people's coulrophobia. That's the fear of clowns, and it's one of hundreds of phobias people may suffer from. Here to talk about phobias, our Clinical Director of Outpatient Services, Staff Psychologist at Lindner Center of Hope, and OCD, CBT Psychotherapist Professor at University of Cincinnati's Department of Psychiatry, Dr. Charles Brady, Staff Psychologist at Lindner Center of Hope, Dr. Nicole Bossi, and Pediatric Psychologist and Researcher in Behavioral Medicine and Clinical Psychology at Cincinnati Children's Hospital Medical Center, and Assistant Professor in the UC Department of Pediatrics, Dr. Natasha Cunningham. You can join us at 513-419-7100, email talk at wvxu.org, or find us on Facebook or Twitter. And Charles, Nicole, and Natasha, thank you so much for being here this afternoon.
Oh, thank you for having us, Mark.
Yeah, thank you.
Charles, what is a phobia, and how do you distinguish that from just a basic everyday fear of some kind?
Yeah, from a number of things. One is you look at the intensity. We often have fears of many things, but a phobia will almost strike you like a lightning bolt. Gives you that sense that really you're terrified of something, and you're going to notice a lot of physiological changes. Your heart rate's going to start to go up. You're going to perhaps feel dizzy, feel faint. It's not unusual. Someone may start to feel nauseous, feel an overwhelming wave of panic. And basically what the mind is interpreting it as is that this is a life-threatening situation, when it really isn't. And what ends up happening is that level of fear starts to cause us some disruption in how we're handling life. Either we start to avoid things that we typically wouldn't avoid. We're not able to carry out our roles in our daily life as whether worker, family member, boyfriend, girlfriend, student. And so we really then see that interference factor that comes in. And that's really how we distinguish a phobia from kind of the other many fears that we have as human beings.
And Nicole, this is a form of anxiety?
Yeah, it's classified under the anxiety disorders in the DSM. And there's lots of different ways to treat phobias, specifically, exposure response prevention is one of them. Typically, it's called systematic desensitization with simple phobias. And we can get into that whenever you're ready.
Do we have an idea how many people suffer from phobias?
We do. Estimates are about a 10% lifetime prevalence rates. We do see an increase in adolescents where up to 15% of adolescents can experience phobias. And they're more likely to have not just one phobia, but having multiple phobias is much more the norm. So the average person who has a specific phobia is on average likely to have three phobias in addition to other co-occurring mental health concerns such as other anxiety disorders or mood disorders.
Does that make it harder to treat, Natasha? The fact that people can have multiple phobias?
It's just true to the clinical profile of these patients. And I think what we found, which has been really interesting, is in work done on the treatment of phobias, by effectively treating one phobia subtype, you can oftentimes have positive impact on other phobias. So there seems to be some generalization of effects, both for helping to prevent the severity of the other phobias and potentially also improve outcomes specific to anxiety-related problems in other domains as well.
So how often do people say they're phobic about something, but they're not really phobic? I mean, I hear people use that expression a lot.
I think that becomes something that's common in our language, but unfortunately, I think leads to one of the misperceptions that it's very common for us to have strong feelings of anxiety. There are things that we're afraid of. It's not a bad thing to be afraid of things that are dangerous or life-threatening. It's healthy. You know, it keeps us from swerving out of our lane in traffic. It helps keep us on the straight and narrow, not taking risks that could threaten us. But that, I think, unfortunately, when it gets expressed so commonly in our language, the folks who suffer phobias start to feel misunderstood. They start to feel that people really don't understand what it is that they're facing. And many people with phobias, will not have a lot of noticeable anxiety in other arenas. And so for many of them, there's a hesitancy to even admit or express that, hey, I have this phobia, and it doesn't sound like what other people are talking about. And that can many times, unfortunately, keep them out of getting the help that they need.
With children, it's interesting, too, because fears can be pretty normal developmentally for young children to express that would be similar to situations that might be something that could develop into a phobia. So for children, things like being afraid of the dark or thunderstorms or large dogs, these can all be somewhat normative and transient experiences. So to really disentangle whether or not it's a phobia would depend on, is this something that happens immediately? Does it trigger a very strong reaction? Does it happen every time the child is in the phobic situation? Or is it something that's kind of waxing and waning? And kids also express phobias sometimes a bit differently than adults do. So they might have a temper tantrum, they might cry or freeze or cling to their parent when they're in a distressing situation.
So there's a difference between being startled by a